All right, and welcome back to another Conquest Corner. On this particular episode, we're going to get back to, it's been a bit, we're going to get back to our Why You Should Play a Certain Faction series. In particular, today, we're going over the 100 Kingdoms. So the point of these videos is for, especially for anyone who's new, but anyone else who might be looking at them as well, to both talk a little bit about the lore, about the different play styles that I see for the army, why you might want to play them, and also, just as importantly, why you may not want to. Again, remember, not every faction's for everyone, so there's definitely good reasons why you should or maybe shouldn't play something in particular. This should hopefully be especially useful, like I said, for anyone who's just new to the game or new to looking at factions or wanting some brief overviews of what to look at. Keep in mind, for anyone who is looking to purchase any conquests, we do have in the show notes beneath, we do have a code. Code is Terrain Kickers. There's also a link you can click on, so it saves you 10%, helps us out as well. So if you want to order anything from Parabellum and you want to save a little bit of money, absolutely feel free to use that code. And like I said, helps out both sides. All right, so in case you haven't watched one of these before, so this is the most recent one with the new updates. I'm probably going to go back through, I don't know if I'll redo much of the other episodes, but I'm probably going to redo at least some of the rules discussions related to it, because some things have changed, obviously. So everything I say might here might not always be evergreen, but the overall vantage point and viewpoints would still hold no matter what. So we're going to get into a bit of lore here then. All right, so for the 100 Kingdoms, this is one of the human factions. So there are several human factions in this game. Old Dominion were the original sort of human faction. Remember, we're talking about multiple centuries ago. We're talking about the height of human civilization, them creating essentially a god for themselves. Wasn't exactly that. It was a sort of a primordial being that we essentially arose into godhood with our belief in it. It got more powerful as we believed more and more, and kind of had it fracture itself a little too much, wasn't able to fulfill all of our grandiose wishes, we stopped believing, and that caused essentially the fall. There's a little bit more involved in that. In the Old Dominion, we go over it a bit more. Before this happened, there were some different offshoots of humanities. You have the Nords, who were up far to the north, essentially living out their lives, having the spires mess with them. You have the city-states, who were sort of a separate entity, saw some of these problems and tried to distance themselves from the Dominion, essentially the original humans. And then you have the 100 Kingdoms. So these were also people who were, at the time, distancing themselves from it. I don't know if they've went into a lot of why they did it. The city-states, it was essentially, they kind of saw the writing on the wall. For anyone who knows 40K, you're essentially looking at Eldar versus sort of Dark Eldar kind of things, like the ones who decided to leave and the ones who were too close kind of thing there. For the 100 Kingdoms, I'm not sure if we know a very good reason why they did. I know we know the reason why they weren't all destroyed. So remember, when the main city fell, when all that happened, it utterly destroyed Capitus. It is a ruin hole, essentially, in the ground for almost all intents and purposes, at least the very middle of it is. But the rest of it, destroying anyone who is within a certain range of that. The 100 Kingdoms, though, they ended up surviving because of the Last Legion and the sacrifices they had. So the 100 Kingdoms was essentially this group, these various legions and all of that, and the very final legion is what ensured that they actually survived. So they were able, with that, able to push themselves towards the Bitter Sea, essentially pushing themselves west. So when all this happened, they were able to fight their way going west. I don't know if it was a physical fight where they were trying to put down all the evil that was occurring or exactly what, but they were able to make their way west. From there, over time, over the multitude of centuries it's been since all this has occurred, or maybe even longer, they've been able to spread out essentially from the western, towards the west, coming back a bit east, but not crossing the mountains that lead to where the Old Dominion, where Capitus and all of that was, as well as obviously there's some other groups around. There's different spire groups and Dwag home groups all throughout their lands. But essentially, they've now started to fill out the maybe more the country proper of Aya. This particular continent, I should say, not country, continent that they're on. Now, this is a very fractured people. You want to think medieval societies and fiefdoms and lords and nobility and all of that. It has a very, 13th, 14th sort of century feel, maybe 11th or even earlier, depending on what part you look at or what sort of timeline you look at. So they call themselves the 100 kingdoms. There's not 100 kingdoms necessarily at any moment. Kingdoms or little fiefdoms come into existence, get absorbed, or just get destroyed entirely throughout any particular timeline. So there are a lot of their own individual little pieces. Now, it wasn't always this way. There was a point at which point they had an empire, essentially, where they pretty much joined themselves together. But prior to that, and now after that, about the 100 or so years it's been since the last emperor, they've been a lot of their own little independent lands. When we think of power structures, the power structures have been waxing and waning for various powers. So during the time of the emperor, the orders, which we'll get into what these different factions are, but the orders were flourishing. Essentially, with the emperor, the nobility and the church were being pushed down. The orders were up. Once the emperor, the last emperor, died out, about 100 years previous to essentially current timeline, the nobility and the churches have been upwards in their cycles. So the nobility, probably more so now, the churches are up and coming. Previously, you know, it keeps going through who does what. And in a moment, we'll get into the sort of goals or machinations of each of those three groups. So you have a lot of individual lands with this church element, these different orders and legion element. We'll talk about the legions that are still around, all pretty much vying for the power as best they can, trying to direct the human settlements in the direction that they see fit. So what we want to do now then is we want to get into the different factions. First one's going to be the nobility. So for the nobility, originally it was a very might makes right sort of approach. So I have my little fiefdom here, and this area is mine because I have the muscle and the strength to make sure you can't take it from me. And if I want some of yours, well, if you don't have the muscle to stop me, now it is part of mine. Originally, this was either being done because of either their own power, so whatever they had on themselves, or by beseeching the various orders that we'll talk about shortly. Essentially, the orders have their particular plans and actions and things that they're doing. They're essentially knightly orders for all intents and purposes, maybe is a good way to think about it. As time went on, and the empire, the Talaran Empire, essentially rose to prominence, they were reduced. So the emperor was more of setting the rules himself. So they were brought to heel for all intents and purposes. However, the last emperor, Otto the Fourth, I had it somewhere else in my notes. Otto the Fourth, once he died, they were able to start gaining power. So when he was gone, the nobility are now able to get more and more influence. They essentially, they have a forum where they create the rules. The rules that they created downgraded what the order could do, removed power from the church. Essentially, they want the power for themselves. Prior to the emperor, they were able to get it. Once the emperor was gone, after that amount of time, they were able to get their power back. Now, much like any time, you have this, essentially they form a conclave, and every 4 years they meet to discuss various things, including trying to elect someone new to be the new emperor and all of that, which it obviously never goes through because everyone wants someone else, or even if you get multiple people together, you never get enough of a quorum for it. So when you look at these nobles, so all these rulers of these various little fiefdoms and kingdoms, some of them are imperialists. They want a new emperor, so they want someone on the throne. They want to pull the people back together, and they think that's the best way to progress forward. And some of them are sovereigns. In other words, they don't want there to be an empire anymore. They want to say that this land is mine, I control it, it is, you know, within my right to do so, and basically go from there. They said, all of them, all of these nobles, however many there are at a time, they're all members of the imperial conclave. Every 4 years, they're going to meet. They're presided over by the chamberlain, and they will make the laws of the land. And part of it, trying to vote and figure out if there will be a new emperor. It's in the 100 or so years since, hasn't happened yet. The lore also does talk about how it's the time for raucous debauchery for them. So it's high from being a time of anything noble, even though they call themselves nobles. And that's more of by power rather than by who they are. Next grouping we're talking about is the Order. So we mentioned a little about those orders. They came out of that last legion, the only legion that ended up being escaping the fall. Again, I don't know if they told us a lot of the other bits. We know there's various other legions because the Old Dominion, we can see the different legions there. But one of these legions was the only one to actually make it out. You have different orders in here. You have orders of the Sword or the Crimson Tower who are more military focused. You also have other orders like Order of the Sealed Temple, which is more political or monetary. Obviously, they have military might, but they don't necessarily go about their goals in the same sort of way. Now, they originally, like I said, they were besieged by the different nobles originally to be able to give them better claims to their land. With the rise of the Talarn Empire, they gained to great prominence because the emperor was really essentially on their side and really saw their virtues. Once the emperor died, though, the nobles made sure to lower their standings in every way they could. And the orders thought rightly, probably rightly so, to not fight at that moment about it. They knew it was either we accept what they've come up with, or we go to war. Keep in mind that the emperor is the one who established this imperial conclave, so it did have legal standings. Though their standing overall has been lowered, their reach and pull has been lowered, their military strength is not. So this is still the main military force, if you want to see it that way, of the land. And we'll talk about in ways in which some other pieces are as well. We're going to go into the faith then. This particular sect of humans essentially has two faiths. There's the theists and the deists. They essentially believe somewhat similar things from two exactly opposite viewpoints. So remember, these are the people who made it out or were far enough away from the fall of Capitus when Haslia fell, all of that, that they survived. In their mind, for the theists, God is perfect, and we are the reason of the fall. In the deist mind, we are perfect, and it's God himself who fell. So the theists don't believe in the fall of divinity. They believe, essentially, that we weren't good enough, and this is our punishment. So we didn't worship, believe, have faith, all those sorts of things hard enough, and God is punishing us. So when Haslia fell, that was God saying, you guys aren't doing a good enough job. They believe that prayer and sacrifice and faith, all those are needed to gain strength back. So if we put our belief solely in their God and all of that, that we will grow back to prominence. They fully believe that the people who are left, they're left because they were the chosen. Everyone else was wiped out, but we are the chosen. And if we believe hard enough and we pray hard enough, we can bring ourselves back into God's good graces. I said Haslia's fall is the punishment from God for not doing well enough. We didn't do a good enough job, so we were punished. The deists believe essentially sort of the opposite. Like I said, they believe not more that God is our distillation, not that we're imperfect images of him. So all of our possible perfect attributes put together are the form of what God truly is. And our limits and us not doing a good enough job of ourselves, not towards God, but in ourselves, is the reason for the fall. So only if we perfect ourselves, only if we strive to achieve better and more, can we do something to both honor God and, again, get back into the good graces. The deists are much less centralized than the theists, although the deists really appeal to the lower class because it's essentially this belief that the best thing you can do is to do your best. And if you do your best, that you'll be risen up from there. These two groups have had their times when they have been much more powerful. Right now, like you said, the nobles through the conclave have essentially pushed them down to a good extent. Especially because they are restricted, the theists are restricted in what sort of, they're only really allowed bodyguards, they're allowed, the name is escaping me right now, of course, Skatari, my apologies, they're allowed Skatari, but they're not allowed their own military. Now, both of these two factions are getting to the point of potentially coming to blows, and the faith are potentially getting to the point of coming to blows with the military, sorry, with the nobility as well. Because again, they have a strong held belief and they want to rule, so the nobility ruling, the same way the orders want their power and all. So we notice it's, like I said, we'll talk about the last faction in a moment. It's four different groups all vying for exactly the same control. The last group is the Imperial Remnants. So when that last emperor, Otto IV, died, the nobility tried to reduce the order in the church. They said they made various laws and restrictions, and they tried to disband the Imperial Army. And the Steel Legion, which was one of the legions in the Imperial Army, just said no. They said no. They set themselves up a residence near the capital. And they said, hey, the capital and everyone here, they're our protectorate. So we're going to protect them. And you can't do anything about it. Now, the nobility, rightly so, decided that was a fight not worth having. So what essentially happened is they decided to have an imperial chamberlain who's going to imagine, sorry, manage the imperial estate. So the nobility all were trying to fight amongst themselves to see who's going to take control of the imperial estate, which is both rich, powerful, essentially the seat of the emperor, and maybe become a new emperor. And they fight too much. So they came up with the best of the worst decisions they could come think of. They just said, okay, we're going to give it to a chamberlain. And that chamberlain is going to rule over the imperial estate. They're going to call this conclave together every 4 years, make the laws, all of that. And they're the ones who's going to look over it. Because essentially they're one of us, but they're not exactly one of us. They don't have their own little fiefdom to be looking over. They're going to be looking over this instead. So, once a few things this chamberlain does. One, the chamberlain then you have the Steel Legion who's protecting the town. The chamberlain also looks over the Gilded Legion because again, the chamberlain looking over the imperial estate has the money to get them to do the things that you need to. So essentially, there's two legions that they're looking over. The chamberlain has enough votes to essentially help get the things they want across. Or I say they because I don't know if it mentions particular names or in this timeline, particular names, but particular things that they want to get across. And these are votes from areas and retainers and things like that that the emperor had. And since they're looking over the past emperor's estate, they now have these things. So they might not be able to get a new emperor in place, but they can make sure that the things that they want to have happen have a better shot at actually occurring. So overall, those are the particular four pieces. Is that when you think of 100 kingdoms, I think of medieval cultures. I think of the rise, if we think of, say, Europe, I think of the rise of, say, Christianity. You could also then talk about the rise of other religions as well, and or particular sects in there that are, vying for power. When you think of the different bits of the theists and all of that, we can talk about, Luther, putting his information on the door and all of those sorts of things. And I don't want to get into the royal politics or religion discussions of all this, but obviously it mirrors it to an extent. So you can look at it to some of those levels as well. So that's a little bit of who they are. So that's a bit of who they are. At least think of knights and peasants and nobles and all of that, and you've got a pretty good idea, and then a growing church presence. What we want to take a look at now, then, is we want to start taking a look at a little bit of the rules related to all of this. So, for these, I don't go through all the rules. I basically just go through the army rules, and then I discuss, like I said, some of the different play styles that I see. They will not be exhaustive. This is not meant to be a resource in such a way to help you build all of your lists. I would like to do some of that, but this is much more of a glossing over the ideas so you have some concept of what you're looking at. So, let's take a look at those army rules that we mentioned. Keep in mind, these are essentially a bunch of humans. So, much like in most settings in D&D or any game you look at, humans, our biggest vantage point to us is our adaptability. They have that as well. So, when you make your army list, you select one of the following traits. All your regiments and characters are considered to have that trait. Let's go through the other one first, Relentless Drill, because that's much shorter. All your infantry have support too. If a stand already has support, get support +1. So you do have some pikes and all of that that would get extra support, but otherwise all your infantry gets support +1. Chronicles 2. That is useful because you find a lot of times in this, your close combat infantry blocks, maybe not your shooting blocks, but your close combat infantry blocks tend to be large blocks. At least that's the way I see them run. I'm seeing in units of 5 or 6 or more, much like we might see in city states. So getting that support means that if you're running, say, 3x2, so 3 wide, 2 back, that you're still getting a lot of extra attacks because you have that support too. So you're getting a good amount extra than, say, other people might or than you may might. And if you have enough support, you're getting even more. The other rule is veterans. So you can choose any number of regiments in your army to be veterans. There used to be a base cost attached to the original calling them veterans. That's not the way it works anymore. If it's a veteran regiment, all officer models in that will double in points cost. So this is why you don't necessarily call all of them veterans, because your officers are now twice as expensive. When an officer model is attached to the regiment with a leader and standard bearer, so we have to keep in mind, you have to have both of those items or be allowed to take both of those items. Not every one of your regiments is able to do that. But when that's the case, +1 to your clash or volley, maximum of 4. So the max of 4 is fine. You're not, I don't think, Your character gets it as well, so it could transfer to them as well. But otherwise, you're not seeing above the 4 anyway for a lot of your just basic regiments. But we have to keep in mind, everyone doesn't get this because you have to be able to take an officer. You have to also then have a standard bearer and a leader. The leader's easy. You're going to have leaders. You're humans. Not everyone gets a standard. And you don't necessarily actually want to double up the points of every one of those officers. In a moment, we'll take a look at some of those when we talk about the units. The other thing is dynastic alliances. So when you build your list, select another warlord. It has to be a different entry than your first, and they count as a warlord for purposes of scoring. Remember, a lot of missions give 2 extra points for killing a warlord. They do mention that noble lords and mounted noble lords mean the same thing. Mounted prior commanders and Order of the Sword prior commanders mean the same thing. Now, you can only have 1 active supremacy ability per supremacy phase, no matter how many warlords you have, but that means you can swap. So some of these supremacies are really good early. Like, we'll talk about ones that let you get Vanguard, and all your Imperial Officer gives Vanguard. So early game, that's useful. For later game, you might be looking at the other ones. So you can have 2 Warlord traits. But I said, only one of them is active at a time. So when you swap over and all that really matters. All right, now let's get into some of the units and playstyles. Now, the first thing I do want to mention, we talked about, you could be a veteran if you want, double your officer cost, and take care of the things. You'll notice, unlike some other factions, these guys don't get free banners often. So the leader part, like I said, leader is easy. But notice for these then, if you wanted either of these to get to, say, Clash 3 or even the Clash 4 for, say, Gilded Legion, you're looking at 50 extra points because you have to double the cost of one of these two, whichever one you may want. And don't get me wrong, they're good. Drill Master is good because, hey, you get extra attacks and all that. But then you have to stand a pair. So you're looking at minimum 50 points extra. You're taking an extra stand to get better stats. That can absolutely be worth it, but your points are going to start stacking up. We're going to find that if you wanted to do a lot of veteran in the right ways, these things are going to get too expensive. Things to notice, things like militia, you can do the same thing. But again, your standard bearers are cheaper, but then you have to take double point upgrades. You're getting close to the cost of a stand. So in a lot of these cases, if you can do it, you're looking at close to the cost of a stand. I know some of them cannot. Oh, sorry, your household knights actually get a free banner. But their champion, the officer, would then cost you 50 points to be able to get to Clash 3. So rather expensive. I know. So certain of them can't do it. Your Ranger Corps, your Longbowmen can't because they don't have anyone that they're allowed to take. They don't have any officer models. And when you're looking at some of these units with their volleys, you'd maybe want better shooting. You're not allowed to get better shooting. Same thing here when we look at the Mercenary Crossbowmen. Your militia could do it. That could do it. Mounted squires can if you wish. I think some of your orders, actually no, most of your orders, the Lazarus, Ash and Dawn cannot. Your Crimson Tower cannot. Your Seal Knights cannot. Order of Sword cannot. Skitarii don't. Steel Legion can for 50 more points. So you have some options for it, but it's not going to be everything. So I wanted to mention that briefly first. All right, so playstyles. First playstyle that at least I look at is an all-cav list. Pause there briefly to look up. They used to have essentially one-shot offer where you could buy a full 2,000 points of horse of a cavalry list. I don't see that up right now, but I did just see it advertised on my Facebook like a day or two ago. So maybe it's still around, or it's coming back, or there might be another option. Maybe I'm just missing it, but they used to do that. And I said it was 2,000 points of cav, so you can run this army just purely in cavalry. I said, when you take a look at it, you do have some characters. You have your prior commander. You have both Crimson Tower, Sealed Temple. You have both of those. You also have a Mounted Noble Lord. So you do have some Lord level choices. You have at least two of them out right now that can take this. So if you want to do this, like I said, you have some supremacies that work well for this. Speed of Horse gives you plus one impact. So your Household Knights, extra impact. Your Household Knights actually have some pretty good impact. Your Household Knights, if memory serve, I think they're... That's Household Guard I clicked on. My apologies. Household Knights. Household Knights are impact three with brutal impact one, so you can get an extra one, so you can now be impact four. These are your medium, they're your mainstays anyway. Usually you're taking them to be able to take a lot of the other special guys. And you reroll failed hit rolls of six when in doing those impacts. So you could have that one turned on for the turns when you're going to do impacting. You have your Priory Commander, First Blessing. You gain Blessed. It's once per battle, so you choose the particular turn you want, and you get plus one attacks characteristic on hard or hardened plus one. So you do have some options. Obviously, the Priory Commander for Sealed Temple will be out in the future. Notice for these two leaders, there we go, pulling up the other one. The mainstay for the Priory Commander is Crimson Tower. Crimson Tower, very good. And then you're taking the special ones. For him, he is looking at his... Restrictor or Household Knights. So you could take Mounted Squires as your mainstay, Household Knights. Then if you actually look at the box, I believe that's the way they run it. They give you, I think it was 2 units of Mounted Squires, 2 units of Household Knights, 2 Crimson Towers, and I forget which other ones it was. But it's like one of each of these guys in those to be able to actually get to it. Because if you're running on horses, it's expensive. Now, I don't want to go through, for the moment, all the various horse units. Things to notice on most of them. Very good resolves. Quite good defenses, or reasonably good defenses. Pretty fast, decent moves. No evade, that's a thing in the army. There's not much evade in this army. There's a few units, but you don't have a lot of evade. The other big thing to notice is they tend to do most of their damage for these different horse units on impact. Because they tend to have things like, okay, Crimson Tower, impact 4, brutal impact 2. We're looking here, impact 3. Yeah, they have a cleave 1, which is quite good. A lot of attacks, but a lot of the other ones don't do that. They do more on Crimson Tower do a lot more on impact. These guys do poorly more when they're stuck in. But a lot of times your horses want to be getting the charges, so you have to be very careful of what you're doing and what's happening with your opponent. Maybe do some feints and things like that to try to pull them in. So one option is obviously just pure cav. Another option, of course, you could just run infantry blocks. You have tons of infantry. If we look at all this infantry, you do have some heavy specialized infantry like these guys, so Iron Discipline. Hey, if you're engaged in the side or rear, you don't lose your support like you would. And no rerolls on the morale. So all the bonuses that people get, if they hit you in the side, go on. Pike formation. Hey, you hit them from the front, you're going to lose your impacts by 3. So this is a unit that wants to sit on an objective. Let your opponent hit you. You're fine with that in many ways. Your defense 3, pretty good. You can go, seasoned veteran to get Bastion if you want. Or Drillmaster, get some extra attacks and double time, be able to move faster. For this, it's especially important depending on the leaders that you want to bring. Not that the horse says it's not, but you're a little bit more restricted there. You have your Imperial Officer, Noble Lord. Like I said, Noble Lord, that within 8 inches of him, get to reroll the sixes when making defense. And they may also reroll sixes during clashes. So if they're close by, that infantry gets some nice rerolls. Your infantry, you want the reliability. Getting a little bit more reliable is really going to help them out a lot, especially because then maybe you don't have to put veteran on everyone. You could choose after turns you want. Otherwise, in the beginning, Imperial Officer, rapid deployment, 2 units every turn, get Vanguard. You can be up the board as far as you want. If you take the very options in the Guild of Legion, get even further. So you can really start pushing these large infantry blocks. If you're doing those infantry, you have some nice cheap options like Militia at 95 points, or even if you want to get cheaper than that, Militia Bowmen. Yeah, their stats are garbage, but these are things that can go out. They're light, so they're not necessarily scoring for you, but they can go out. They can sit on objectives to essentially tie up the opponent. In other words, as remember, you have to have a scoring unit and have more units than your opponent. So you might be able to stop them from that purposes. You might be able to give them enough upgrades to make them worthwhile, but otherwise you keep them nice and cheap. And let me tell you, bows, yeah, they're not a great stat, but if you aim first on twos, fire enough shots, you might get something through. The lights here are nothing to write home about, but they're super, super cheap. And if you're cheap enough, that's worthwhile. Having stands is something in this game. You look at other things, you look at mainstay options like men at arms. You're looking at defense three guys. Not great result, but you're going to take big units, and there's ways to make sure you have characters. Obviously, your resolve can be higher, all of that. You obviously have some other grades like neophytes if you want to get them to be devout and count as priests, so that way other casters have a harder time casting near them. But you have a lot of foot options. You have Steel Legion. So here from your foot options, here's your heavier hitters because they are cleave two with five attacks a base. On threes, you could make them up to fours if you are inspired, fours rerolling sixes, or you could just make it fours with rerolling sixes if you're closer enough to that noble lord. Expensive, but quite good. So longbowmen, obviously, if you want better range, notice longbowmen actually have AP, so they actually start piercing through, and they actually have cleave as well. I'm more worried about their volleying, but with 24-inch range and arcing fire, they can always essentially just take aim, shoot. And that will do them a lot of good. So you could run that way. Like I said, you have your Gildan Legion or your Steel Legion for heavy hitters. You have nice and cheap militia to fill out those ranks. You have some good characters with good abilities you could bring. Obviously, if you want, you could mix these sort of things together as well. And we'll get to that in a moment. Other option currently that you are starting to see is a holy option. You have Priory Commanders who have Devout. You have Theus Priests who have that as well. They have different abilities related to if you're casting things on like Devout units. So, that regiment, the Spirit Shines, would give them the Devout special rule. And should the character stand, cast Devout, sorry, Divine Sanctions, all friendly targets with the Devout special rule benefit from the effect and do not perform a dual action. So for what that does, I don't know if I said this, what I want to say. Once per battle, when you do a spell casting action, everyone who's Devout counts as having been hit by that spell as long as you cast it, essentially. It's cast on them. And then, hey, should it go to, should it be there? Everyone else gets the same thing. So you can really pass around certain of your abilities at least once per game. So you can kind of start running that more devout list. The big thing is there's ways to give some other units devout. The big thing is the Skitarii are the ones that really have it for the moment, and they're just not out. So I think you do have some options there if you want to run them more in this sort of holy way. You can get some good movement out of, say, chapter mages and all of that. But if you're just purely going devout or the religious element, I don't just see a lot there. You're probably taking a few of those things. Maybe if you're doing it that way, it just depends on who your warlord is. You're making a Theus Priest one of your warlords. You may be making a Priory Commander one of your warlords to get some of that bit out. The other option of obviously is to mix all this together. So you have chapter mages that are really good at hunting. They have a nice long range with crossbowmen is usually the way I see it. You take some fire spells, you can really sling some damage down. So you have a barrage. You have there's some upgrades you can give. There it is, Kiss of the Farewell. You gain barrage three if you already have barrage. Barrage plus three, and deadly shot. Deadly shot is on six, you take double wound. So I've seen chapter mages with that. You're now shooting lots of times. Very good volley actually on this one. Then on your turn, instead you can do say a fire spell. You can inflict a hit per success at armor piercing two. So I'll hit him with that on my chapter mage. Then the chapter mage who's sitting in the crossbowman unit will chain activate the crossbowmen who are in a good range and be able to hit some more people down. So if we look at those crossbowmen, where are they? You could also put in longbowmen as well. I see it more often in crossbows. Maybe that's just what I play or the people that I play against. There it is, mercenary crossbow, my apologies. Mostly because it's armor piercing. So you're having just more armor piercing type attacks because she's now also armor piercing. So you're all very similar rather than longbowmen. And also it's the range. Now you're at the same range. Longbowmen hit further. So you'd actually be wanting to move them first. You obviously then could look at some big infantry blocks to be sitting on your objectives, some cav units to be pushing their way into the opponent or hitting them on flanks once they knock into you, especially if they go against certain units like Gilded Legion, they're probably sticking around for a while. And then you have your various shooting units to be able to pepper your opponents from range. You have a good amount of different sort of spellcasters, not as many as some other armies, but you've got a couple different spellcasters to help support with that as well. All right, so that covers the different factions, the Hundred Kingdoms, and what they look like. In other words, the sort of playstyles I look at. So why play them? For Hundred Kingdoms, if you're the person who likes, you know, medieval history, likes the idea of knights, this is a great faction if you want to paint, if you're, say, let's talk about other games I play with, like Warhammer Fantasy. If you're a Bretonian player, this is a great army for you because, one, you could go just pure knights if you want. You could go knights with militia, like a Bretonian army often is. You could paint each and every one of your models that you want in a different livery and all of that. If you want to show that there are, you know, various knights coming from different nobilities and households all together to fight against whatever the common foe is, or you can go for a much more uniform look if you want. I said, if you like that sort of feudalism sort of feel, this fits perfectly. If you like the most, I don't know if this is the best way to say it, but realistic army, this is just normal people. We actually had this stuff in history. You know, Nords are people, but there's monsters. Spires are monsters in of themselves. Old Dominion are the undead. City-states does fit, but then they have automatas, and they also have minotaurs and all of that. So if you want something more grounded in the real world, this is your most grounded faction. So if that's something you enjoy, I know there's some people absolutely love that, great fit for you. If you want to do all cav, this is a great way to do it. If that's what you're looking for, one, you can do it. Two, it's a great-looking army. It was an army I was going to buy had I not needed a car. But that is absolutely something you can do as well. So they have some different types of play styles. And if you want a pure mounted list, if you want a pure speed list, you can do it. You don't have to take any infantry stands. And that's absolutely viable. Why you shouldn't, though? Because I think it's always important to talk about why you should and also why you shouldn't. First of all, there's nothing exotic. Now, we talked about these are just normal humans. We had this throughout history. But if you want something that shows you you're playing I would call this a low fantasy game. The reason I don't call it high fantasy, because there is mystical and magical stuff. I call it more low because it's not super magic intensive, at least not compared to other types of games that I'm aware of. But these are just normal humans. For all intents and purposes, they are 100% normal humans. You're not getting any of the weird of the world of Ea, which might be something that you like or something that you want. So if you don't just want to, oh, here's some regular infantry, here's some regular militia, you want something that's more exotic, these aren't it. They have very human stats. Now, like I said, we talk about veteran, that you can upgrade them and all that. But they said there's a whole lot of militia. There's very little evade in this army. A few units have it. I know at least a couple times I've played against them. What I realize is a lot of times if the opponent has some cleave, they get nothing. I've had cases where that, because I'm like, oh, it's on this. Do you have an evade? No, we're humans. We have no evades, or very, very little in the army. So humans are in most games are sort of the run of the mill, the average. And these guys do feel that. Now, you can up stats, and I'm not saying they can't be good. I'm not saying they can't perform well. You have some great cavalry units. Kill the Legion are really good. But you are going to look at those stat lines. You're going to look pretty human. You're not going to have anything too crazy. You'll be reliable. You got a lot of shields. Like I said, nice and reliable, but nothing necessarily to write home about. Again, if you're looking for the weird, if you really want very, very crazed rules, not the army for you. The other reason I will say, now, this is my own personal experience. I never want to talk about these things in such a way to deter you from decisions that you want to make, but I think this can be a very tough army to play. Reason being, one, if you're going the cav option, you can just absolutely do that. But the cav option means you're going to have a lot less units in general. They're good units, but they're a lot less. You usually kind of need the charge in the attack to really be able to cut through people. Some of yours are better on charging. Some are better on the attacking. But really, they want both. As I've seen before, if I got the charge on your, say, some of your better cav, especially the ones that have brutal impact, if I charge you instead, excuse me, so like Crimson Tower. If I charge your Crimson Tower, you're stuck. You're not doing much of anything. Now, you have a good defense. You have a very good resolve. I'm not saying I'm going to carve through easily. but you're not going to hurt me nearly as much because you're just a clash guy with no cleave, no nothing. You can leave, take some wounds, and then maybe charge something else. But if I'm positioned well, maybe you can't. They're super expensive. They're 200 points for three stands. They're 80 points extra per stand, 15 points for that banner, which means you're putting a giant point sink in that if you don't get the charge, is going to do very little for you. Or if you charge into something and it just happens to survive out, say they got really good evade, and or they just luckily roll out, or they have tons of wounds, maybe they stick around. So your horses absolutely need the charges. They don't receive the charges very well at all, because then you get stuck. I've seen that with my own cataphracty. You don't have a lot of brutes, so you don't have the other quick sort of options that other armies have. You don't have monsters. You don't have the big terrifying things like other armies have. All the rest of the stuff you have is a lot of normal humans. Yes, some of them don't take the one unit, I should say, doesn't take the minus from being hit in the sides, but you have to be careful. If someone starts hitting you in the sides, your shields, all those special things, you know, you're not the best resolve, you're not the best defenses, especially if you're losing your shield. I have a bit of cleave, you probably don't have evade. I can cut through you. You're humans. Like I said, they can be good, but I do think they can be tough to play at times, because I think if you engage incorrectly, other things in this game can punish you for that. Not having a giant monster is a thing. It absolutely can hurt them. Yeah, you got your cav, but say you don't have any cav on the board, then you're not fast. You don't have other brutes that are quick. You don't have other monsters that might be fast. If you have no cav, or if I got rid of your cav, or they're way off on the side, you're predictable, because you're reasonably slow. Maybe I hit you in the side with a giant monster. Maybe I have some terrifying. Now I'm lowering your stats. It's going to hurt. So they're not as complicated as some of the other ones. Like Wadroon are complicated, because you have to figure out how their special rule works. You know, Sorcerer Kings are going to be complicated because you have to figure out how their special rule works. These guys are complicated because once I'm on the board, I need to make very good decisions. I feel that they have one of the harder times to dig themselves out of the hole if they get into it. So if you poorly position and I'm able to get, say, some of the charges I want or position where I want, you might be in trouble. And that's things that I've seen as well. That could be true of any army, but I think to some extent it's a little bit more true here just because of the makeup. Again, maybe if you're running certain types of lists, it's mitigated to an extent, but I also want to aim this towards newer players. And a newer player, you're not going to have all the tricks and tips and everything put together perfectly. So I also want to make that assumption as well. All right, so if you were buying this, again, just looking at their web store, which we could save you 10% on, obviously it makes sense to get your one-player starter set. Like I said, they list what's there. They give you this one. My apologies, let me go back as well. Oh, okay. They give you an option that is purely a mounted starter set or one that includes foot models as well. If we look at the mounted one for a second, because personally that's what I love. Again, if I was going to play this, that's what I would do. You got a Priory Commander, you get 6 Crimson Tower, 6 Ashen Dawn, 3 Seal Temple. So, there we go. Oh, sorry. Yeah, 6, 3, and 3. So, you're getting a lot of stands of horses. You're actually getting a lot of points. This is probably maybe one of the more points-heavy ones, just because of how expensive some of these are. 6 Crimson Tower, 3 Crimson Tower, 200, so that's 400. Ashen Dawn and Seal Temple, 190. Ashen Dawn, 240. So 2, 4, 6, call it 7. You're probably looking at, you know, unlike some of the other boxes, a lot of fun of the other boxes are like the 600 range. This is probably 800 or plus range, because again, you also then have to put in your leader who's like 110 and the upgrades that go on. You actually are probably approaching close to 900 points in this one then, because you're at 2, 4, 6, 8, 9. No, you're actually probably like 1,000 points realistically, or pretty close to it. So very expensive box, and that's a good deal. 150, 160 bucks if you're getting an American, or 10% off if you order with using our code. That can get you very, very far. That's pretty close to an army there in that box. That means if you actually want a full army, you could actually just get 2 of those boxes, and now you probably have 2,000 points or very close to it. If you want some more foot units, You could go with the other normal one player starter. You're getting three household knights. You're getting three mounted squires. You're getting some household guard or legion or guild of legion and a mounted noble lord. So notice they're again leaning into horses, but you do get some foot units. It would absolutely be appropriate as well. How many points is this one? I'm curious. So I just checked. It's just shy of 700 points. Again, you could probably get the 700 points if you put something on your lord. I was running them as Household Guard, not Guild of Legion, because he doesn't take the Guild of Legion. But if you got another leader, then you could. So options to expand out from this. If you're expanding out from the horse box, I say if you just want to do Cav, just buy another one. That's not a bad army. Otherwise, this box with the other one is actually pretty good. You're not quite at 2K, but you're pretty close to it. You're getting two different types of mounted characters. You have these two full things, and then if you want, you could stretch into a character that could take them as Guild of Legion instead, if that's kind of what you want to do. That way you could just have your mounted squires and your household knights with your... Sorry, 12 men-at-arms as well. My apologies. I missed that. So yeah, it is probably about the same amount of points. My apologies, I missed the men-at-arms. The men-at-arms. You're still looking in the 600s. So that's not a bad plan. From there, I would probably choose an Imperial Officer if you want another leader, because the Imperial Officer, since you're allowed to have two Warlord traits, his trait is actually very, very good. You're then looking at, if you want some magic, I would go with the Chapter Mage with some crossbows. If you're not looking to go that way, but you just still want some shooting, you know, long bowman, obviously that's a good option as well. It just depends on exactly what it is that you're looking to do with them. If you're looking for horses, you know the option. If you're looking for stand, I would want to go towards more Guild of Legion. If you're just needing the bodies, militia aren't bad just to help plump out your ranks as well. But otherwise, yeah, I would probably... Hunter Cadre, if you're really worried about some of the heavier things out there. We didn't really talk about them, but if we pull up... I have it on the wrong thing now. I won't pull it up right now. But you take a look at Hunter Cadre. They have some rules to be able to help you out with those things. All right, so that gives us an overall view of this faction, the sort of things they do, what you could do with them, if you're purchasing them, the way in which you might expand them out as well. The first player starter sets are always a great idea, and if they have a giant box army and you're ready to kind of like go all in at once, that's always a good choice, I think. Again, I'm just not doing it right now myself, but if mostly because like I said, I'm doing some Sorcerer Kings. Otherwise, a pure mounted army does sound really cool, and that might be something for a someday sort of thing that I get to. One of those sets... No, actually, none of those were on pre-order. Do realize the one was a 5th edition anniversary. That might not stick around forever. So just be aware of that. All right, so thank you for everyone who did watch. If you do watch back, I've done this for most of the other factions, not all of them. Now, some updates need to be done to some of those videos because some of the rule part has changed a little bit. The overall thoughts haven't, but the base rules have a little bit. And I will probably re-release those with those changes at some point as well. So that way we have that. I do have a few others to do. City-States is, I believe, the last one I have to do. Sorcerer Kings, I'm going to do one as well, but I'm going to wait till they come out because I've done so much other stuff related to them. I want to do something related to some other pieces as well. Other things you should see from us in about 2 weeks, you should start seeing some battle reports from us because we have a 3-round event that I'm going to be filming games out of. I also hope to just film some other games for fun anyway, but I'm going to be filming some games out of that. There will be other Conquest content. We're going to start doing some actual list-building episodes. They might come out as the corner, so non-full-length official episodes, or in that, whichever way they come out, but some ones where we actually sit down together and actually build some lists. I'm looking to try and have some of the people who were at some big events to come on and talk to me about the game itself. If you yourself are a player who has played in some big events, I'm thinking Adepticon, but there's some other ones out there, of course, in the world as well. If you play in a big event, you want to talk about your experience there, especially if you happen to, you know, have done well at it. We can talk about, hey, how did that go? What was that experience like? All of that. We'd love to have some people on to have some of those discussions. It's something I know I see in other gaming communities, and I haven't seen it here as much, and I would love to be able to be a part of that. If you're looking to pick up any Conquest, like I said, down in the show notes, we got a code to save you some money. If you really do like the content and you're not looking to pick up Conquest, we do have a Patreon as well. For this, I pushed the Conquest one more because it helps us both out more, because then you're actually saving money on stuff as well. But instead, we do have that at some very low tiers as well. And I am going to start putting some locked content behind that. Not long-term locked, but maybe short-term. Maybe when we do battle reports, I'll lock them for a week behind that first, just to give those who actually give us that extra support to keep the lights on, even though my one light is out, but who help keep us going, a little bit of something as a thank you for what they do for us. All right, I belabored all those points for long enough. So on behalf of everyone at the show, have some good hobbying and some great gaming.